Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. A decade after the wave of Arab Spring uprisings shook North Africa, violent change of government is striking the continent yet again, this time in West Africa. With the coups in Niger and Gabon completed, have we seen the worst of it yet? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Efem Ubi, Associate Professor at the Nigerian Institute of International Affairs. Professor Ubi, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Now, Africa is definitely no stranger to coups or entrenched government, which probably go hand in glove. But I heard you say that these latest uprisings are somewhat different from the wave that the continent witnessed back in the 1960s. What's the difference?
The coups we are experiencing right now, they are not different from what we experienced in the 1960s. But what is different about the coups is the nature of the speeches, you know, telling us why they are taking over government in these countries. Now, you know, and that also shows in a way that the Africa itself has not moved beyond the 60s, you know, and that's what I call the Africa's progress of shame, you know, and the resurgence of military coups in West Africa. Now, if you listen to the speeches, everything remained the same, but the addition is the fact that, you know, in the recent coups, especially the ones in Mali, the ones in Burkina, the one in Burkina Faso, the one in Niger, they all say the same thing, and which is the fact that that insecurity has played a very prominent role. You know, those countries have not been able to manage insecurity stemming from terrorism, insurgency, and a host of other security problems, you know, which the country's government have not been able to manage. And that is why they are actually coming in, you know, aside the other factors like economics. And so what I really meant is that the changes that have taken place has, you know, over this last 60 years or 60 years and above, you know, has not really added any value to the African condition. And so the military will consistently come into government at any slightest opportunity, you know, provided the condition is right for them.
Now, you mentioned several coups already, and I want to sort of stress for our audience that while the events in Niger and Gabon are in the news, there has been a dozen of coups in Africa throughout the continent over the last 3 years. Now, some of the earlier uprisings had foreign benefactors. For example, the removal of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya was aided to a substantial extent from abroad. Do you see any foreign hand in the latest developments?
Well, if we have to look at the way international relations, you know, is fashioned out, you know, you always see a lot of foreign interventions or foreign interferences in Africa. But, you know, with regards to changes in government, you know, I don't want to be very, you know, blunt about saying the fact that there are foreigners who are involved, you know. But, you know, if you look at the history of Africa, you know, from the days of independence, a lot of foreign interferences has been observed in Africa, especially with regards to the change of government or unconstitutional changes in government. And so you see a lot of foreign connections with many military coups. But recently, you know, I think there is a slight difference, even if there might be that foreign intervention. But Africans, too, are beginning to come to terms with reality, You know, and so if you listen to the military or the soldiers that have taken over, you see they're actually very unhappy with the situation in Africa. And they're also trying to change things, you know, like what we say in English, you know, take the bull by the horn. You know, they want to take their destiny, you know, into their hands and do what they should do to bring about growth, economic growth and development. And so with regards to foreign intervention, if you look at the few coups that have taken place, you know, the last five coups, you could see that even these soldiers too are actually aggrieved with the foreigners who are within their territory, you know, and they are asking them to leave, like the Niger case and all that. So right now, I think there's a slight change, you know, in terms of these interferences, because the Africans themselves are coming to self-realization and they're beginning to ask a lot of questions, even the common Africans in the streets too.
Now, being myself from Russia, I just have to ask you, because some observers noted that some protesters in Niger carried Russian flags. And I certainly don't think that Moscow has that kind of ability to influence events on the ground in Niger. But I wonder, what do you think this is emblematic of? What do you think what kind of message, what kind of attitude those people who brought the Russian flags with them onto the streets wanted to send?
It's like asking me, you know, when the coup took place, when the coup took place in those countries, many of those countries actually burnt their colonial, in quote, let me, because I don't like the language, their colonial masters' flags. You know, they were trampling upon it and all that. So you're saying that the people too are actually not happy with the superpowers who have colonized them, you know, in the last 60 years ago and all that, or maybe the last 150 years, you know, in there. But, you know, the citizens who took Russian flags, you know, in those countries might have a reason for it, you know. Now, you know, in international politics, you are free to choose your partners. You're also free to choose who you want to cooperate with. And so maybe it's a sign of saying that we are tired with the old, our traditional partners. We want to move to new partners. And those who carry the Russian flag, that might be what the messages they are sending, you know. But because I am also wondering, you know, because we are not experiencing coup in Nigeria. We don't have that kind of situation in Nigeria. But you see, we are also, the same question you're asking, we are asking, why are they carrying Russian flags? Are the Russians involved in this military purchase that is taking ravaging Africa as a whole and all that? So why are they also trampling and burning French flags and all that? Why are they asking the French to leave? And, you know, the Malian government, actually the military junta in Mali, brought in the Russians, mercenaries, so to speak, you know, and the Burkina Faso.
Well, we call them private companies because they were employed as a private business. And sure, they have certain protection by the Russian government, but I assume they are acting on the base of formal contracts.
Well, you know, there are other private mercenaries across the world. So why specifically the Russians? So these are all, when you put them together, when you knit these things together, you begin to ask a lot of questions. You know, and that is why that is actually what is creating or bringing about the question you're asking me. Do I think the Russians are involved? Well, the Russians government might not be involved, you know. But, you know, right now, you know, in as much as you're moving away from a corporation, you know, a military pact or a military corporation, you have to look for some military
alternative partners. I understand that. And Niger, I think, is a very interesting case, because up until this uprising, it was considered to be a solid Western partner. It hosts an American airbase with roughly 1,000 troops on it. And if we check Western publications for 2021, 2022, they were very complimentary of the country, but not anymore, obviously, because those assets, military assets, are now threatened. And yet the West and Washington in particular haven't made any decisive or overt moves to stabilize this situation. How do you explain this hesitancy on the part of the West to you know, come in and defend what they have on the ground, which in the past they did quite decisively.
Well, like I said, you know, this time is really different, you know, and with the anti-West sentiment, you know, in many of these countries, you know, it is, we don't expect the West to intervene or to interfere, you know, to stabilize the situation, you know, because, for instance, you're asking the French government to leave, and you still expect the French government to come stabilize the state, or you're asking the American to move their bases away from these countries, and you're still asking them. You know, it's an irony. And so the West, you know, right now, you know, many of the countries in the West will have to stay aloof for now and watch, you know. And aside that, you know, these countries themselves, you know, they have decided what they want. They're also not calling the West to come in right now, and because there's so much anti-sentiment against the West, the United States, and the Europeans, and as well as for the Francophone countries, you know, the French, you know, the France itself. And so I think they are basically thinking, I'm sure, on their own, how they could manage the situation. You know, and right now we are also not, we are also trying as much as possible to look at how we could, you know, look for a peaceful settlement in this crisis, you know, for this crisis in the various countries. What we need to do, you know, and you see the Economic Community of West African States are rallying around consistently looking for a way for a way out of this contagious of military purchase across the sub-region. You see, like I have argued, you know, we are looking for solutions, treating the symptoms and not actually looking at the root causes of this problem.
Absolutely, but sometimes you need to deal with urgent or very painful symptoms, and you've already singled out insecurity as the most pressing concern that may be generating or fueling many other problems. And I heard you say that this is an issue that could and should be addressed collectively, that Africa should come together and agree on how to rid the continent of insecurity. What stands in the way, and do you think authentically that the Africans can do that by themselves without foreign assistance, even genuine foreign assistance, be it UN peacekeeping or, you know, private contractors, what have you? Do you think the Africans can do it by themselves?
Right now, there are a lot of global challenges that no one country can manage and no one country can find solution to. Issues of security, especially security emanating from terrorism, insurgency, and jihad, piracy, you know, in the Gulf of Guinea, in the Gulf of Eden, this kind of security problems, we need the international community to come together to look for solutions. Because, you see, once you have a problem in your country, it is bound to precipitate into other countries. And it's not just those countries, but it has it could expand into to into the other continent, like what terrorism has come to you know, to how it has ravaged a lot of countries and all that. And so, for the Africans, the basic solutions, you know, it's not just bringing partners. We need the partners, but you see, we ourselves should begin to look inward to find solutions to some of these basic problems. You know, the problems, many of the problems ravaging Africa stems from inside. For instance, economic problems, development problems. Now, you see, you have these resources across Africa. You have so much, but the resources is not precipitating in terms of human development index. It is not touching the common people out there. And, you know, once the people are frustrated, like I've always said, they have to look for solution. You know, they have to, you know, no, they have to take the bull by the horn. And that's why
absolutely.
You see this.
Professor, let me take the bull by the horn right now, because we have to take a very short break right now. But we will definitely discuss people's frustrations in the second half. So stay tuned for that.
Thank you. Stoltenberg versus Blinken. Washington wants to keep the conflict in Ukraine going, but doesn't want to be on the hook for going in and fighting on Ukraine's behalf. This, of course, is what NATO membership would mean.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with FM Ubi, Associate Professor at the Nigerian Institute of International Affairs. Professor Ubi, just before the break, we touched upon people's frustrations. And I heard you say before that the 21st century governments should be people-oriented and development-focused. And it's impossible to argue with that. But building a functional, effective government is an arduous task. And even the developed countries are struggling with it right now. I wonder if you think that those deposed governments truly abdicated that responsibility before their people, or is it the people who have unrealistic expectations about how fast or how much it takes to rectify not just decades, but centuries-long imbalances?
It is not the people, it is the government. You know, the government is supposed to provide the basic necessities of life. And now once citizens have these basic necessities of life, you know, to keep them going, the citizens will not complain. You have to build the infrastructures. You have to create an enabling environment for economics to thrive. You know, I hear a lot of African countries talking about wooing investors. You cannot woo investors into a country where the infrastructures, the structures are not there, the enabling environments are not there. Now, you have to also look at corruptions, issues of corruptions. You know, you have to tame corruption. You have to look at the forms or systems of government that is being practiced in these countries. You know, sometimes, you know, what I have seen over the years is the fact that many African governments just adopt the system and implement hook, line, and sinker. You know, a system that does not fit with the local peculiarities. And that is why I am saying, you know, that if you are adopting any system, try to adapt it to fit the local peculiarities. And more so, you see, yes, issues of economic growth and development, even though the foundation begins with the country, but we also need development partners. We also need the emerging economies. We also need the advanced economics to come into. You see, we like them to come and invest. But you see, the nature of investment also matters. We're not looking for portfolio investment. Like you rightly say, which in another interview I talked about, is the fact that, you know, the 21st century, the problems of the 21st century are different from the problems of the 19th century, 20th century. This time, the people want more. The people have come to self-realization. They know more this time because of the Internet of Things. And so the government should be the one to put in place those things that the people want. This is because electoral promises are many.
But Professor Ubi, this is a very interesting question, because obviously all governments, when they come into power, they are interested in delivering something for their people simply to stay in power. I mean, like, if you work well, people will be in favor of you staying on. But I also heard you say that it's not only that the African countries failed liberal democracy, but that liberal democracy failed the African countries. And this is a very interesting question for us, the Russians, because we are definitely not a liberal democracy, but we have a system of governance that wants to provide, you know, a dignified, secure, and I would say insult quality of life for their people. But the way it approaches that is not through liberal democracy model, because in order to provide that, I think you have to prioritize those social concerns, social safety net, over typical Western issues like, let's say, gender rights or abortions. There's only, you know, a limited amount of time and effort that the government can dedicate to any particular issue. So I wonder if Western models of development are really suitable for countries that are indeed struggling with providing the most basic needs for their people.
What colonialism has done is to our relationship with the West over the years has actually it truncated Africa's development in its societal development. In any way, so what we have now was a system that was foisted on us a system that was, that was brought to us. Now, I am not saying, and first, I think I need to make this clarification. I mean liberal democracy is failing in Africa, and Africa is failing under liberal democracy. But I also say that democracy is not a one-size-fits-all. That means if you are practicing a democratic system of government, you should make sure it conforms with your social structural dynamics, it conforms with your social political dynamics. In short, it should be practiced in such a way that it conforms with the local peculiarities. And now that is where the problem is. Now you see, you're exporting liberal democracy into Africa, into a society. These societies, are different in terms of how they develop, and how they were forced together through the Balkanization of Africa at the Berlin Conference in 1884. And aside that, you're now exporting a system that is alien. It's supposed to be a transcendental progression, into that system you want. But now we just adopt everything and start practicing it the way it is. And that is why you're seeing the chaos, the conflict, the raging insecurity, because this system itself that you're practicing is not actually adding value to the people. And so democracy itself should be such that it should add value. The people should benefit from it. The people actually want democracy. We want democracy, but let it precipitate in terms of benefits and gains to the people.
I heard you say before that there is a huge need for African countries to discover their own unique identities rather than living out or living under the borrowed ones. Because we know from, psychology that you can never be your full self if you try to copy someone else. Your life, your values, your ways of doing things should come from within, and they should be rooted in your history, in your way of life, in your circumstances on the ground. What do you think is standing in the way of it? Why do you think it has been so difficult for the Africans to truly own up who they are? Because it's an immensely rich continent, not only in material resources, but also in terms of culture, in terms of philosophical thought, in terms of education. It's one of the places where humanity originated from. Why do you think it's so difficult for the Africans to look at themselves and respect who they are?
I would like to say Africans are Africans. I am an African, both in and out. But what we have failed to realize is a national identity. Every system, every country, especially in Europe, let's use Europe as a case study, you all have your history, your foreign policies, even your national development plan and everything, everything that revolves around politics and economics revolves around an identity, which is culture that we mentioned, culture, language, history. But in Africa, we were forced together when the Europeans were at Berlin in 1884, 1885. They dissected Africa on the map, on the table, kept the map of Africa on the table and dissected Africa. And now, you see, when they came to Africa, they found out that what was the delimitation on the map was different from the reality. And so many ethnic groups were cut across, For instance, you find some Tuaregs in Niger. You find some Tuaregs in Mali. You also look at in Nigeria. We have the Yoruba ethnic group. Some of them are in Nigeria. Some are in Benin. Some are in Togo. Meanwhile, these people, prior to the demarcation or delimitation of Africa, most of them were empires, growing in their own right, in their own way, and so now, you force too many ethnic groups together. Now, these ethnic groups are not actually wanting to be together. They don't want to be together. And that's why you see a lot of crisis, ethnic identity crisis in many of African countries. You also see religious crisis, and all that. So what I am saying is that the way Africa was demarcated, is part of the problem. you know, because we're not allowed to develop. And if we were allowed to develop transcendentally, you know, slowly, we could get to the point where many advanced countries are today. And so we know we are Africans, but I think it is high time that we should be allowed to develop in our own ways.
I don't remember who said it, but it's often quoted. I think it was one of the leaders of Indian independence movement, that freedom is not given, it's taken, it's claimed by the proprietors of development. So it's not about somebody giving Africa the right to develop. It's actually, and you've been writing about it all along, it's about Africans understanding who they are, understanding what their needs and what their rights, what their desires are, and, you know, pursuing them more forcefully, especially given the fact that the continent is now at the crossroads of many power struggles and power rebalancing. So it's in the good position to claim its own and put out its own demands.
Which is even a problem for us right now. The power struggle, the superpower rivalry in Africa. You know, I was in another forum where I stated categorically that, you know, when you talk about rivalry in Africa, you trivialize Africa. You make Africa look like a thing that you just come, everybody wants to share Africa. You know, we don't, in the 21st century, that shouldn't be what we should be looking at right now. We should look at the quality of nations. We should be talking about equity in the international system. We should be talking about parity, but not to treat Africa as a subordinate, you know, because the whole idea of global politics, you know, creates a system of superordinate and subordinate, and which is why what the Africans are actually reacting against right now, you know, that they want to be treated on equal basis. So China is coming to Africa. We want you to treat us on equal basis. Russians too, they are cutting Africa. We want you to treat us on equal basis. The same thing with the United States and all the European Union and all that. And so this is what we are looking for. I think it is high time that the African leaders themselves, because part of the problem is leadership. If you have very bad leadership and lack of governance, you can never get anything right. You know, and so we need African leaders that are nationalistic. We need African leaders that are patriotic. They should have the nation at heart. The people want leaders who have them at heart, who will look at first the basic inalienable rights of the citizen, but not people who are embezzling, you know, who are very corrupt. The question is that, which I keep asking, how is it that for 60 years, Africa cannot produce anything? We are all just getting our manufactured goods from abroad. This is not what it should be. I think we need to rearrange ourselves generally.
Professor Ubi, we have to leave it there. I just want to say that I slightly disagree with you here. I think even over the last 60 years, Africa has produced a lot of valuable things and valuable thoughts. But I agree with you totally that it's very high time that the continent realizes its own destiny, that comes out straight out from its own history rather than from somebody else's prescriptions. But we have to leave it there. I greatly admire what you being on our show. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. Bye.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.